Before I went to Lilo and Stitch, there was a little pet project that was brewing in the studio. I really love doing development, and I always would be the first to raise my hand and say, "Yes, I'd love to help develop something." I find development to be really rewarding in that you're there during that exploratory process when an idea is just a seed, and you really can think very openly about who a character is or what a story, a story could be based on character development. And one of the experiences was a project kicking around, which was a sequel to Roger Rabbit. And Eric Goldberg was the creative force at Disney behind getting that project going. Eric and I had met a couple times, through of course just being at Disney together. And it also just so happens that his name would be Eric G, and so was mine. And so our emails would often get crossed up. And so we just had a very kind of playful rapport about, "Hey, Eric, I think this is your email." It didn't happen too often, but just that occasionally something would come my way that was really his, and so forth. But Eric's just a terrific, terrific guy. He's just a creative powerhouse, really, and he's so passionate about the craft of animation and everything animation. He's very, very inspirational just to hang around. And I just remember the times I would pop over to his office, and he was working on the sequence for Fantasia, the bit with the jazz drummer, and all that. And he was doing some stuff with that, and I thought, "Oh, Eric, this is great. You're really kind of pushing the envelope with, the style and so forth." But anyway, so he was working on that at the same time he was helping getting this Roger Rabbit project on its feet. And he had worked on the original Roger Rabbit as well. So there was a producer attached to it and so forth, and they wanted to basically prove out the idea that shooting in a live-action environment didn't require all the puppetry that was required during the making of the first Roger Rabbit film. A lot of that could be done through CG. And it would just simplify the shoot and just allow for better quality interaction between the characters and various what looked like live-action props. And so that was sort of the incipience of the idea. And so they had me involved with that. But right away, Eric was saying, "Could we do Roger in CG?" And I said, "Wow, that would be just an enormous challenge, because it would be great." Yes. The answer is, "Sure, Eric, yes, we could do that." But at the same time, I was like, "Oh my God, how would we do that?" Because the amount of control you have to have over the characters' deformations are just above and beyond anything that had been done to that time. And sure, there's squash and stretch, and you can, manipulate volume and so on. The tools at that time were getting better. This was done in 1997 or 98, thereabouts. And so the tools were starting to allow some basic deformations, but nothing really that would allow that kind of deformations. And ironically, still to this date, there's nothing available in a commercial product that allows for the kind of squash and stretch that you would do with Roger Rabbit. And I ask Autodesk every year, "Do you have something that can do?" No. So, coming back to Roger Rabbit, though, Eric said, let's see what it would take. Let's animate it both traditionally and in CG." And so we went down the path of trying to figure out how to do that. And at first, we were kind of looking at, we put some limitations on ourselves to say, how would we do that given the known technologies that are out there, like kind of off the shelf? Probably in about 3 months' time, we actually brought down somebody from Alias. We were using Maya at the time, and we said, "Can you help us, figure this out?" And had a guy working with us from Alias sitting on the show floor with us trying to figure it out. Couldn't do it. We just couldn't do it. So we said, "Okay, we have to go down a different path. We have to figure out how to think not from the character rig inside outward. We have to think from the character's skin outward inside." Right? You have to think from the outside in, not from the inside out. right? Because you have to think
about... start with what you want rather than what it can do. Or...
Yeah, but you, even on a frame-by-frame base, if you think about posing Roger Rabbit and you think about his skeleton inside, oh my God, what is that? You know, what you have to think about is what are the shapes, what are the outcomes in terms of the shapes,
right,
that you want? Because you draw Roger Rabbit not by thinking of what his skeleton or his anatomy is doing, like you would with a lot of characters, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You think about what shapes you want to read and where's the line of action? Where's the volume? Is he all of a sudden taking any volume that he had all the way up at his upper body area and now is down at his toes?
Right, yeah.
Or is it something that has shifted from his enormous pantaloon pants all the way up to his head and has gone through his ears?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's just a very unconventional way of thinking about how you handle a character. It posed such a problem for us that we really decided to kind of toss everything out the window and say, let's think about it being as a shape-based animation. And what I mean by that, again, is that we're thinking about the exterior contours, about the literal shapes that we wanted to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up using some technology that was developed for Dinosaur, which was a muscle system. But we were able to modify the muscle system in a way that effectively was like putty, you know, like this taffy putty kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we applied this putty all around the character and started treating it like how do we manipulate it almost like it's a clay model as opposed to something that was, you know, rigged from the inside out. Now, we still kept the rig because you still had to kind of pose the character,
mm-hmm,
but that would get you maybe, if you were lucky, 50% of the way.
Sure, right.
And probably more often than not, it was about 30% of the way. And then you would have to go in and basically sculpt all your shapes around it. And it was a very manual process. And we knew at the time, oh, we could never make a movie like this, but at least we got to do a proof of concept to see if this idea would work.
Yeah.
And it did. You know, it worked out really well in the end.
Yeah, no, I saw that. It was quite amazing how deep it was, 3D, but it just wasn't moving like that at all.
Yeah, and of course we never allowed... we never allowed the technology to limit us to say, I cannot hit that pose or I cannot hit that shape.
Mm.
It's like we were adamant about being able to hit every single shape that we wanted to hit and not say, well, you know what, I just can't get the rotation out of this particular node, so therefore I'm going to have to adjust the pose. It's like, nope. We went back to like the drawings, and we would always look, you know, what was faithful with the original drawings of Roger and say, if I were to draw this, and we did draw literally every frame of this thing, by the way, because it was done both 2D and 3D,
right, yeah,
that we could compare it side by side, and there was no difference, you know, between the posing or the in-betweening of the character, mm-hmm, other than the fact that one of them was rendered to appear CG and the other one was obviously 2D.
Yeah.
You know, and so the inherent feeling of Roger Rabbit is maintained through it, but... the render quality is really quite different.
Yeah, now that's the kind of one of the problems, I think, with computer animation is there's quite often a compromise to what you would draw to compared to what you can do in the computer, I guess.
That is one of the most common problems, really, is that you have a rig and you move the rig around to get the best of what you can out of it, but it's always, you always feel like, oh boy, I wish I could get a smoother line, you know, from here to here, especially exteriors, you know, not the interior so much, but the exteriors, like, there's this little bump here, and if I were to draw this, I would just not
smooth it out,
just get rid of it. So that's definitely still the biggest problem, I would say, in character animation, you know, CG right now. And my eye goes straight to that stuff, because again, my background is the traditional side, and I look at things like, you know, is this the cleanest silhouette that I can get out of it? You know, because it's, you know, you're trained to think that way in terms of line of action and silhouette, because those are the things that give you the most intent in terms of body language.
Yeah.
You know, and when you got this lumpy, you know, all this lumpy stuff going on because you can't get those straight lines, or not straight, but you get curvilinear lines.
Yeah,
it's
kind
of a problem.
And it's always nice when, like in drawn animation, it's just like the poses are just nice graphic sort of statement for everything's supporting that.
Yeah, and people, I mean, often I hear the comments like, well, That's true for cartooning animation, but is that true for other kinds of animation? And I think the answer really is that if you're working with, if you're keeping your silhouettes in mind, you're keeping those strong poses in mind, you're working to a universal language that people understand. It's a body language, and it's not cartoony. You know, if you see somebody kind of slumped over and their head is dropped, then you know that they're either tired or depressed or something like that. If you see somebody standing, you know, tall and erect, you know that they're alert, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to me, it's like that kind of body language is something that should be able to be achieved, you know, by any character rig. You know, and that's it's an important part of your silhouette language.
Yeah. So the Roger Rabbit thing didn't happen. Would you like to say kind of why that? What happened to that?
It was shelved because of political reasons. The political reasons mainly had to do with the fact that the property is owned by a conglomerate of different parties, and those parties included Disney. It also included Steven Spielberg, who had recently formed DreamWorks at that time.
Mm.
And it also included Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy, who were basically at odds on the project at the time. It was a real shame because having that group of people with those egos in the room, it just was doomed.
Yeah.
Quite frankly. And it was really a shame because I was working really closely with Eric, as I mentioned, but Roy Disney was championing the project, saying how great it would be, and Roy would come around frequently when we were working on it to have a look at the progress. And one of the things I loved about working with Roy is that Roy was the voice of progress at the studio in terms of breaking new grounds. He often spoke, I mean, he was careful not to say my uncle would have done this or that,
yeah.
But he was very much carrying the spirit of what his uncle did, which is to say, we're not a company about cranking out formulaic stuff. We're a company that wants to push the bounds.
Right, yeah.
And so that's why, you know, the time Roy wanted to do another Fantasia, he did short films like Destino, you know, with the Dolly artwork.
Yeah.
And he really wanted us to do Roger Rabbit with a CG character, because he just knew that it was time to break that barrier.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so he was the champion of it. You know, but even he couldn't get through the politics at the time.
Yeah, it does seem strange that that's like there was such a big success the first one and they never made another one. But there's talk of Zemeckis doing one now.
There is talk. I wonder how he's going to get through those politics. But certainly the animosity between Spielberg's via DreamWorks and Disney would be softened at this point.
Mm.
You know, at the time it was all about thumbing your nose, you know, across the street, basically. But I think now it's different.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, DreamWorks is a public company now, and Spielberg's just making movies, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as much about the pride of, you know, why they did what they did to form a different studio.
So.
Katzenberg might be a different story. I think he's still thumbing his nose,
still not, so.
And he's very successfully thumbing his nose, so he can keep doing it.